Brent Musburger is with us, and I have a quote here in front of me that makes me smile, and I think it's probably part of the essence of your success over your long career, Brent. You said, "I'm a sports fanatic. If I were retired, I'd still be watching everything anyway. I'd watch a rodeo." And I think that that's probably something, that enthusiasm for what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never lost it. And if I do lose it, then I'll walk away and spend 24/7 with my wife of now 48 years, and you know, live happily ever after. But I'm addicted to the travel and the games, and I love getting ready for whatever contest it might be, Ron, and that is the truth. I would sit around over here with my four monitors in my rec room, and I would turn on four different games, and I watch them all at the same time. I mean, I love the competitiveness. I love the athletes, the coaches. The enthusiasm that we have in the college game, of course, sets it a little bit apart with the bands and everything, much more pomp and circumstance. But when you get to the playoffs, nothing beats the professionals and the National Football League and the NBA and Major League Baseball and the National Hockey League. Those guys in the playoffs, it is amazing. It's just absolutely amazing to me of how well they play.
You certainly are respected by coaches, particularly the college coaches, and you've worked with a lot of great broadcasting partners. And I know Steve Lavin was going through a particular difficult time when he was the coach at UCLA, and UCLA was playing Stanford, and you were aware of it, and you took him up to the top of the stadium. Tell me a little bit about that conversation.
Well, Steve was very down, and the rumors were circulating that he was going to be fired, and he was seriously thinking about quitting. And so I took him upstairs, and I said, "Steve, here's a lesson. Don't quit. If they want to get rid of you, you make them, and you make them pay you in the end. But don't read all the newspaper articles. If you're having a trouble with the administration, go in and talk to them about it and see what they think." And, of course, he was eventually let go, but he did not quit. And now he came and worked with us, and I really enjoyed, Ron, I really enjoyed broadcasting basketball games in the Big Ten with Steve Lavin. He was a terrific partner, and I'm so happy that he's gone back into coaching at St. John's, and wish Steve nothing but the best. But he was a great, great traveling companion.
He once asked you if you could give me one piece of advice for how to survive so long in this business when he was your broadcasting partner. What would it be? What did you tell him?
There are many times, it depended on the time of night that we were we were talking together, Ron. So I gave Steve, like Dick Vermeil, many suggestions as we went forward, some of which they followed and some of which they didn't pay attention to.
Well, it was while you were having a glass of Merlot and you said, "Stay interested, kids, stay interested."
Like I said, it depended on the time of night.
One of the things that I think is so strong about your career is the fact that you, and I go back to the word I used at the beginning of the interview, adaptable. And that means being in the broadcast booth, and no matter who your broadcasting partner is, whatever the sport might be, that you seem to be able to blend those talents. Kirk Herbstreit now, of course, doing college football. Steve Lavin, Bob Knight doing basketball. How difficult is that, and what has been the secret of your ability to be able to blend comfortably with whoever's sitting to your right?
Well, Ron, first of all, when you go into a situation with an analyst, be it new or somebody you've worked with, you say to yourself, the game is more important than the analyst or the play-by-play man. So we've got the game. And then you say, now, what is it that this person can bring to this game that the audience would enjoy? What do you think his strength is? And, of course, if you've got Bob Knight in a basketball game, you've got specific situations that you can ask him, and that's great. Kirk Herbstreit, great personality, great overview. So each one of them is just a little bit different.
The other thing, too, is that when you're doing a game and you just have a sense of the fact that something exciting is going to happen, and you've been involved with a lot of exciting games. The one I remember the most is the BC game with Doug Flutie against the University of Miami. Tell me about the thought process you went through.
You know, Ron, the thing that I remember most about the Doug Flutie game on that Friday afternoon in Miami was how well it had been played between the two teams, even up to the moment before Flutie threw the winning touchdown pass. And I can remember over on the sideline when Bernie Kosar went over to see Jimmy Johnson, and they were behind late. And Jimmy said to him, Bernie, what do you want to do? And Bernie emphatically said, let's run the ball right at them, which they did, and Mel Braxton dove into the end zone and scored what I thought for sure was going to be the winning touchdown, because there just was not enough time left on the clock. And then, of course, the final second separated that game and made it, at the time, a classic that really has lingered in time. People ask me about the Flutie game all the time. What people forget is that just prior to the winning touchdown pass, there was a 5-yard penalty against Boston College, and they were at the line of scrimmage when they got penalized. When Flutie came to the line, the defense had changed, and the corner had backed off Gerard Phelan, and that allowed Phelan to separate and get into the end zone when Doug heaved it. And the other thing the public doesn't realize, and Jimmy Johnson told me, several weeks later, was that his defensive coordinator thought the game was over. And on that winning touchdown pass, he was in the elevator coming down below in the Orange Bowl. And there were just so many things that went on at the end of that game. It's an experience that Doug and I have talked about, and we've laughed because we've been joined in the hip ever since that afternoon. But it was a great football game, even before Flutie took it to the next level.
Is it important for a play-by-play man to anticipate but not to assume during the course of a broadcast?
Well, I think that's pretty well put. There are times when you feel something might happen, and there are times, myself included, when we probably have ended games prematurely because of that. And really, you should tell yourself just to relax and let it happen and let the scene develop. Easier said than done. Been involved in a lot of chaotic situations at the end of games. But eventually, the monitor will tell the story. And I tell young broadcasters, no matter how well you think you have seen what happened out there, make sure you watch that monitor when they bring back the replay, because you're going to see something that you did not notice when the play was unfolding. The camera has a much sharper eye than we do, that's for sure.
I know you were in a couple of movies. You've certainly been in Car 2, and also you were in The Waterboy. And I have to laugh because I've been in a couple of video games, and there are kids that come up to me and say, you're the dude in the hockey game, are you not? And I guess that's always, that's something you think about. Taking on that aspect of your career and adding it to your whole repertoire, tell me a little bit about why you enjoyed that.
Well, let me take you to the first one that I was involved in. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and it was during that period when I was anchoring the 6 o'clock news with Connie Chung, and I was called by a friend the night before who said that Sylvester Stallone is shooting Rocky II, and he has a problem, and he needs someone to antagonize Burgess Meredith so he can try to get Rocky out of retirement. And we need a sportscaster to come and just do a brief little bit for the movie. Could you do it for us tomorrow? And I said, well, I can do it in the morning. I said, but you have to remember that I've got to get over to the studio by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon for sure to get ready for the evening news. And they said, we can do it. So I went over, and I believe it was about 9 o'clock, and makeup slapped a little makeup on me. And Sylvester Stallone, as you might remember, was the director of Rocky II, came over, introduced himself, could not have been more pleasant, and explained again what they were looking for. And I said, fine. I said, do you have a script? He said, no, we don't have a script. We'd like you to make it up. And I said, kind of, excuse me? He said, just do a normal sportscast. And he said, say something about Rocky Balboa. Where are you? Why aren't you coming out against Apollo Creed? And we'll take it from there. So I said, okay, fine. So I sat down in a chair, looked in a camera. He told me to go. Everybody else was kind of standing around. So I put together this make-believe broadcast, needled Rocky, and said that Apollo was waiting for him. And at the end of it, Stallone went, cut, that was terrific, we've got it. And I kind of like froze for a moment, but I didn't say, don't you want to take two? And he said, that was terrific. And I said, Mr. Stallone, I really enjoyed this. That was my introduction to movies, okay? So they got me cheap, and I could do it quickly, all right? And I got back to work. When the Waterboy came along, they called and took Dan Fouts and me down to Orlando, and we worked down there. And Wedding Singer had been such a wonderful, wonderful success that they were allowing this group to do whatever they wanted to with Waterboy. But just like you, there are times when I'm in a grocery store and not thinking about it, and some little boy will come up and point at me and he said, you were in Waterboy. And yes, I was. But I think the key to my movie career I gave to you. Work cheap and do it quickly.
There's the great story of you. You always go to the shoot-arounds at the college campuses, and you were on the Kansas campus, and Bill Self, the coach of the Jayhawks, pointed to you and asked the players, do you know who that broadcaster is? And one of them said, yeah, he was in the Waterboy.
Yeah, that's great. And that's true, man. I laughed louder and harder than any of the players. And then, of course, this last summer when they did Cars 2, and they made me an actual animated character, Brent Mustang Burger. So right. That was the highlight of my movie career, when there's actually a little car called Mustang Burger. I thought, that's great.
We only have a couple minutes left, but when you sit back and, if you do this, think about your career, what you've accomplished, what you've done, the people you've worked with, the great moments that you've seen, what is it that means the most to you, Brent?
I just think that what means the most to me is probably that I've kept it going as long as I have and have met so many wonderful, wonderful people along the way. Yes, I've been around great games and a lot of different sports, but the people I've met, I think, Ron, will be the key to it, and that I was doing all these things, but yet at the same time, kept the family life going strong. And I think all those things matter to me, because once that career is over, what anybody has left is family, and that becomes terribly, terribly important to me. But I think back through the years and all the great memories and the people and the anecdotes about these friends that I've had, I'd just like to go back and do it all over again.
Is there any particular sporting event or moment that you wish you had been able to broadcast that you didn't?
Well, I suppose that the Olympic track and field would be at the top of the list. I've done the World Championships a few times, and I've done a lot of track meets, but I was never at the right network. By the time I got to ABC, they had lost the Olympics. And I would have loved to have worked with Rune Arledge on the Olympic coverage, and track and field would have been special, because I'd been around it so much. Great, great athletes. I'm sorry it doesn't do better in the ratings now than it used to do, because it's really something to watch the variety out there that we have with the great athletes around the world. But that's about all. I've enjoyed watching it through the years, Ron. So there isn't a heck of a lot that I've missed.
We only have a minute left, but Brent, you remind me of a question I asked Jerry Rice. I said, Jerry, are you going to be one of those football players that are going to have to rip the uniform off? I'm going to adapt that a little bit. Are you one of those people that's going to be hard for you to give up the microphone?
Absolutely. Out of my cold, dead hand.
And yet, well, you appreciate it along the way, and you've enjoyed it. I think that is probably the hallmark, that you probably wouldn't change anything.
No, I wouldn't change a thing. I've been blessed and worked with so many great people, been around so many terrific events, and I just love going to a game and thinking about what might or might not happen, preparing for it, and take it from there. It's been a wonderful career, and like I said about the athletes, I sometimes say to myself, where has the time gone? It went by very, very quickly.
Well, I want to thank you for your friendship, also for your kindness, for your professionalism, and just being able to listen to you over the years. You've been not only a professional behind the microphone and in front of the camera, but also in life as well. You've been very kind to me. Brent, take care, and thanks for joining us on Sports Byline.
Thank you, Ron.
Brent Musburger with us, one of sports broadcasting's most accomplished broadcasters. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.